Welcome in to Talking Terps, a show which covers University of Maryland basketball and football. Talking Terps is part of BSL Radio. Baltimore Sports and Life is dedicated to analysis and discussion on the Baltimore Orioles, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Terrapins. The site has a team of writers providing coverage of those teams and houses live streaming content weekly. Join the conversations on the message board, like BSL on Facebook, and follow BSL on Twitter.
Welcome into Talking Terps. I'm your host, Zach Kiesel. Talking Terps is brought to you courtesy of Mercer Floor & Home Carpet One. Mercer is a third-generation family business established in 1959 and located on Main Street in beautiful historic downtown Westminster, Maryland of Carroll County. For all of your flooring needs, think Mercer. So Maryland's basketball season in full swing. They split their first two conference games in the past week with Illinois and Wisconsin. They've got two huge matchups against Tennessee and UCLA coming up next week. We're also going to talk a little bit of football. The football team will be facing NC State. We just learned that in the Duke's Mayo Bowl in Charlotte on December 30th. Pat Donahue couldn't be with us tonight, but I've got Mike Popovic here to help me break everything down. Mike, how's it going?
Hey, doing good, and good to be back with you. And gee, I don't know if we've even spoken since Thanksgiving. So hopefully, you had a good Thanksgiving and happy holidays to you and to all of our listeners.
Yeah, same to you. So let's start with football. Jump right in. Yeah. I gave Pat the opportunity last week to kind of recap the season and give me your overall impressions of the team. And if you want to give them a grade, A to F, what do you think overall from this season?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, let me go back first. As we came into the season, taking a look at the schedule, and I usually don't like saying, okay, what are wins, what are losses entirely, because they'll always have some surprises, as you know. But the Michigan loss, I thought they'd play Michigan tougher, and they did. I didn't expect it would be a touchdown game and coming down to the very end. But we expected they would lose that game, but they played a lot more competitively. And that was a good sign after they started off 3-0. We thought that they would win their first three games. We knew SMU wouldn't be easy, and it wasn't. But, you know, so far we expected that to go the way it did. The loss to Purdue, and again, that's the one I think that I lament, the one that stands out from all of this season, because that they had a chance and should have won that game. And I know Purdue went to the Big Ten championship, but realize that Big Ten West division was a mess. So give them credit, but it's not as if they ran the gamut of West teams and got in undefeated or something like that, or with one loss. You know, did we think they were going to beat Wisconsin and Penn State? Initially with Wisconsin, no, but they did the coaching change there. We thought that even though that was a road game, might give them a better chance. Penn State, I guess I'd have to lean no, but I certainly thought they'd be very competitive. If they had pulled the upset, would I have been entirely surprised? Again, previewing the season, I would not have been. So yeah, as you take a look, though, they lost to Wisconsin and Penn State, and we've talked about it's the way they lost those games. So I guess all in all, though, in totality, it's the Purdue game that hurts, because if you win that game, okay, your record is 8-4, not 7-5. And that's a two-game swing in terms of how you did last year. And that's improvement with 15 seniors returning. They did win seven games, Zach. That was one more than they did last year. But you still feel somewhat of an emptiness, like you feel like they could have done more. And I think that Purdue game stands out. And the fact that they were not competitive in the games against Wisconsin and Penn State hurts. And you wonder where that was against Penn State when they went and did what they did against Ohio State the next week at home. So you could even lament a little bit of that Penn State loss, because they had a shot in that one. And Michigan, you know, you could take a look at that and say, well, heck, maybe they should have won that one, and maybe so. But I really think Purdue stands out, and maybe to some extent Penn State as well. So maybe I know that's a long answer. In terms of a grade, though, you know, I would give them a C-plus to a B-minus. I think that's the range that I would give them, because they could have done a little bit more. And the effort against Penn State and Wisconsin should have been a lot better in those games.
Yeah, I don't think I gave my grade last week. I'm thinking B minus as well. That's kind of where I'm at, because
I think to be fair, I don't mean to interrupt you, but to be fair as to where they have been as a program, though, probably a B minus is better, because they weren't very good most recently. So let's not forget about that. You know, if they had had some success prior to the last couple of years, maybe give them a C+. But yeah, B minus is fair.
Yeah, I think it's hard, or it's easy to forget what sort of state the program was in when Loxley took over before the 2019 season. The whole issue with DJ Durkin and the tragedy with Jordan McNair and the interim head coach, Matt Canada, who, you know, nearly knocked off Ohio State, but just a lot of turmoil within the program. And it was on Loxley, not just to turn things around in the program, but also repair the relationships with parents and players and high school coaches and families and all of that. And the fact that this quickly, he's been able to get the team to back-to-back bowl games. First time they've been in back-to-back bowls since 2013 and 14. A chance to win back-to-back bowls for the first time since 2002-03. So that's a major opportunity. And I talked about it last week, and I think we've talked about it a lot, but Loxley has said as far as wanting to reset the baseline of the program to where he wants this to be the floor. And to raise that floor to, we are winning six games every year. And then on every, who knows, 4 or 5 years, you have a chance for a special year of 9 or 10 wins. A ceiling similar to what Friedgen had, but a floor higher than Friedgen, where you're not having those 3, 4, 5 win seasons. So we'll see where we go from here. But you're right, a lot of missed opportunities. I think it absolutely starts with that Purdue game. Obviously, the Wisconsin and Penn State game is not the effort you'd like to see. But then what you've also got is better competition against Michigan and Ohio State. Mm-hmm. So that's a step in the right direction, because we really haven't seen that. Obviously, 2020, we saw them go up to Penn State and blow out the Nittany Lions. But, you know, it's a COVID year. It was also 2 years ago. This year, to see that marked improvement, it's something they have to build on, obviously, but positive elements to take away from the year, and where you can look at last year and this year and say, well, there definitely was improvement, not just one win, but there was improvement in some of the competition and the losses and the attitude. So that needs to become more consistent. But I think that is a positive development. And, you know, Loxley's obviously, you know, that seventh win triggered an automatic 1 year extension from him. He's signed through 2027. He's going to have an opportunity now to stack a few recruiting classes on the ones that he's already got, and prove that he can win with kind of a second or third group of guys from the first group that he had when he came in.
And that's going to be the challenge, though, because as I made mention that when we talked several weeks ago about where the recruiting class was ranked, I said that I don't think that that is a product of or a result of people not believing that Maryland can be a solid program and that what Mike Loxley's building there isn't something that is pretty good on and from where it's certainly been. I don't think that it's necessarily not believing. I think it's a product of now NIL, as we've talked about, and also with the transfer portal, with the credits that have to transfer over and the challenges there at schools that take academics a lot more seriously than others do. That's now the challenge going forward. You know, much of the same way that when Maryland started to rebuild themselves under Ralph Friedgen, just as they were getting really good and starting to do something special there in the ACC and build some momentum, then all of a sudden you had new schools come in and added competition. And all of a sudden, where Maryland had made themselves a top three school in the ACC football-wise, then you got some other schools that came in, and some of it was bad timing with Boston College having Matt Ryan as their quarterback, but Va Tech being a really solid program, Miami. And so, you know, that didn't help matters. So now, as Mike Loxley, all these years later, and the transfer to the Big Ten and all that, and all the controversy that, as you pointed out, that they've been through, now they get to a point where you start to feel pretty good about things to an extent, but then you've got this transfer portal and you've got NIL, and now Maryland once again faces some really difficult challenges going forward. And look, Zach, I mean, I know people are tired of me always bringing up Michigan, but look at Michigan. They're back-to-back Big Ten champions. Their recruiting class for next year is not ranked in the top 15 right now. I don't think it's ranked in the top 20. I think it's between 20 and 30. I haven't looked at the exact latest numbers. But you're saying, how is that? I'll tell you how that is. Academics and NIL. Yeah. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, it's absolutely going to be a challenge. Now, to Mike Loxley's credit, he's been able to overcome other recruiting challenges like Maryland not being good for so many years.
Yeah.
And he's been able to get some really solid recruiting classes in here. He's been able to get players like Rickham Jarrett, Talia Tungavailoa in the portal, as well as any number of other players that you want to point to. This is going to be a new challenge for him, but I don't think it's one that he won't be up for. NIL is going to be an issue. And then the portal, so far, and I'm going to knock on as much wood as I can, so far Maryland really hasn't lost a ton of production in the portal yet. DJ Dupree and Weston Wolf, obviously the tight ends, after Mike Miller, the tight ends coach, leaves. That's something that we saw well before the transfer portal, coaches or players leaving, a couple players leaving when their position coach leaves. So that's relatively understandable. Ahmad McCullough, the linebacker, also a key contributor last year and over the last couple of years. But so far, we haven't had the sort of major departures that we had at this time last year when we lost players like Terrence Lewis, Brandon Jennings, Demian Robinson. You lost a ton of young production. Now, if Jayshon Barham enters the transfer portal tomorrow, that all goes out the window. That's obviously the guy that you got to keep. That's kind of the kind of the thing you're pointing to as, you know, he's kind of a, something to build around as a program. But so far, they've been able to retain, even though they have one of the highest numbers of players in the portal in the country, they haven't been key contributors, and they've been mostly guys that haven't seen the field at all. Right. So far, that's working. They've opened up some scholarships that are available to hopefully players that better fit and that can get on the field. The recruiting class, yeah, it's ranked low, but he's got, what, a week or two before National Signing Day? Loxley's always good for at least a couple four stars that he just pulls out of his hat at the last minute. So at this point, I think you can trust Loxley as far as recruiting goes, that he's going to be able to get guys in. And you saw with the defense, especially the front seven this year, a lot of the guys on that defensive line were not highly ranked recruits, and they were additions from the portal. So the coaching has worked as well. The development seems to be better than it was. So we'll see how that goes. I think another thing that's going to help them next year, it sounds like Talia Tungavailoa is strongly leaning towards coming back, along with Jayshon Jones and Spencer Anderson. So those are three key guys offensively that you weren't necessarily planning on having next season. So that's going to help. I think also Mazaya Nasilikite along the defensive line, that's really going to help. So I think looking towards next season, it's going to be a lot of what happens in the next couple of weeks with the freshman signing and then the next couple of months with the transfer portal. And we'll see what sort of additions Loxley's able to add. But they do have a game still to play in a couple weeks against NC State, a really good NC State team, ranked number 23 in the country. Despite losing, what's his name, Ryan Finley, their quarterback, to a season-ending injury, and then he just went and or Devin Leary.
Yeah, Finley was fired to him.
Yeah. He went and entered the transfer portal, but he hasn't played in a while. This is a really good team under Dave Doran, and it seems like on paper – probably a more competitive matchup than the one against Virginia Tech was last season. And in Charlotte, hopefully one that more Maryland fans can attend than the other bowl that was a possibility, which was in Phoenix.
Yeah, and let's hope that Biff Poggi doesn't I'm trying to think of the word, not poke, but yeah, I guess it is poke any more players from the roster or coaches or anything since he's down.
He does have one, TJ Butler, a linebacker, already committed to Charlotte after entering the portal from Maryland. So he's got one already.
Yeah. And he's got one saying, coach. Yeah, he'll be closer to the team again. And of course, his ties to Maryland and then was up in Michigan and then is now taking the Charlotte. Excuse me, taking the Charlotte job there. So let's hope he doesn't end up taking any more players with him to Charlotte, although congratulations to him. But yes, and NC State also lost their offensive coordinator, who took a head coaching job in the last 24 hours as we record this. So they've lost him as well. And right down to like a backup or third string quarterback, both who have played somewhat recently. There's been some talk about, you know, their offense not fitting. Of course, now it doesn't matter because he's hurt, but that they may not have maxed out offensively the way that maybe they should have this year with their starting quarterback who got hurt, as we talked about. I haven't taken a look, Zach. Maybe you have a better idea about how many of their guys have decided to either not play in the bowl game and declare themselves eligible for the NFL or enter the transfer portal. So I'm not sure how many numbers they're looking at and how many substantial guys. You talked about a couple of guys out of, I think, 14 or 16 for Maryland that thankfully we're not losing too many impactful guys of those 16, but still a couple of key guys, including Dupree there. But yeah, this time of year, I mean, I think the difficult thing, and to be fair, you know, Maryland had the benefit of Virginia Tech having a change in coaching staff, having players that were leaving to the NFL or the transfer portal, I think mostly, and they were down to a third string quarterback as well and playing in the game. So that was a big benefit to Maryland of winning in the Pinstripe Bowl last year. And then this one as well, if Maryland should come up short because NC State's ranked and they still have enough of their players from this year's team playing in that game, but it's tough to be able to truly accurately assess that because they've lost some key guys. And what you didn't make mention, but we're certainly not forgetting about is, yeah, but you're losing some of your top receivers to the NFL draft who are not playing in the bowl game. Jacob Copeland, Dante Demas. And I'm hearing that, although I haven't seen anything official, that Rakim Jarrett also will not play in this bowl game either. So that's huge at that point. You're missing some key offensive contributors.
Also, Deontay Banks, cornerback on the defensive side, is not going to be playing in this game. So that's obviously hurts. And side note, I saw Mel Kiper actually has him ranked as a top 25 prospect overall in this draft. So good luck to
really
him moving forward. Yeah. So we'll see how that shakes out. Darnell Savage obviously was the last Maryland DB who was taken in the first round, I believe. I don't think J.C. Jackson was taken in the first round. He was later, was he not?
I think he was later, yeah. He's had a heck of a career, but yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think with the portal and guys not playing in bowl games as often as they're planning on going to the NFL after the season, bowl games and the results are harder to judge. What I think, and I've said this the last few years, what's really beneficial is that extra month of practice, because you're able to get some of these younger guys developed who didn't necessarily see a lot of the field last year, install your systems. Obviously with Maryland, it's systems that they've had for a while since Loxley took over, but always beneficial to get more practice time in. And this is a really good NC State team, obviously not going through a coaching change. So they will be more prepared for this game and they will be fired up playing basically a home game in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yep.
So it will be an interesting matchup, and hopefully plenty of Maryland fans can make the trip down to Charlotte.
Yeah, I mean, the location helps out a lot, to your point.
And again, you
hit it on the head. I know we want to go to basketball. You hit it on the head, though. The additional practice is really the benefit here. If Maryland should lose the game, you don't want to see that. But, yeah, Zach, these bowl games, it's tougher to evaluate them with all the circumstances and the crazy time of year. There's too much going on with coaching changes, players declaring themselves eligible for the NFL, not playing in bowl games, the transfer portal, and early signing period. It's too much. It needs to change. But the bottom line being is these bowl games, unfortunately, are not nearly as valued, and they're not what they used to be, period. They just aren't.
Absolutely. So let's pivot to basketball. The team is currently ranked 13th in the country, split their first two conference games in the past week against Illinois and Wisconsin, number 7 Tennessee and number 19 UCLA coming up next week. So I talked a little bit with Pat about this last week, but we talked before the season about your impressions of Willard off the court, because we hadn't seen how his team was going to play on the court. But now that we have seen how they play and how he operates on the court, what have been your initial impressions over the last month from Willard?
Yeah, I like the way he carries himself. He seems to be somebody that is a guy that's realistic, but you could tell his intensity. His guys play for him and have bought in, and that speaks volumes about that. Now, he's got a veteran team, but it doesn't mean – I mean, that could go both ways. Veteran team – is maybe more adept at being able to learn and adjust to changes quicker because they've played enough and they've seen enough and they've done enough where it's not as big deal and they're understanding better of what he's trying to accomplish. And somebody that's wet behind the ears, but at the same time, guys that can say, I'm not really buying in. I wasn't recruited by you, and you know I'm here, but I'm not all in. Because you're not my guy and I'm not your guy. And there's always sometimes that distrust or that disconnect, but none of that has been the case here. And so, no, I mean, I'm very impressed with the way he's conducted himself, the way that He talks about what needs to be done in order to recapture the Maryland glory. He knows the history of this program and what he's done. And, yeah, I you can't come away other than very impressed with him and what he's done with this program. And, you know, it's I think, as I mentioned, it's not about wins and losses this year as much as about culture change and style of play. And he's done both of those here. And it just so happens that they've won a bunch of games, and we can actually talk about tournament resume a little bit. Even if just for a second, they've got two quad one wins and one quad two win, and they've got some future opportunities here in the next couple of games to add to that resume for an NCAA tournament run. Long way to go, but right now, with what they've done and the schedule that they laid out, it's a possibility.
Yeah, who would have thought that we would be talking about the NCAA tournament at all in Miller's first season, especially this early in the year? The fact that they're ranked top 15, I mean, I don't think anybody would have seen this coming, even people who were pretty high on Willard and his ability here. I think kudos to him for retaining the number of players he was able to retain. Very often nowadays, we see coaches take new jobs and they pretty much have to recruit an entirely new team in their first year. But he was able to keep three starters, and that's absolutely huge, and add two more in the portal. But the fact that he's able to keep Julian Reese, he's able to keep Dante Scott and Hakeem Hart. Obviously, he had a prior relationship with Scott and Hart because he recruited them while he was at Seton Hall. But just to be able to keep those guys and their major contributors this year, and then to add Jameer Young, Charlotte, the point guard, who is absolutely capable of running the offense at a high level. He's leading the team in scoring right now. And it's a team that seems to fit really well together. I think, again, the fact that you were able to retain so many guys, they were able to retain a lot of chemistry and get rolling quickly. Because that's the other thing, the fact that they've come out of the gate so hot has been really impressive for a guy who didn't take this job, who took the job less than a year ago. He's been able to instill everything. And like you said, the guys have bought in. And that's saying a lot for a group of veteran guys who have had at least one coach, one other coach in their career, if not multiple collegiate career coaches. So that's obviously impressive. And you mentioned the style of play. I think it's been a breath of fresh air for every Maryland fan who suffered through years of Turgeon, especially the last few years. And obviously that interview just came out with Turgeon where he admitted he was very burned out, which I think we could all see. It was very visible his last few years. But the pressing, the tempo offensively, and just defensively getting after it, and that's stuff that travels. You look at, we'll talk about this pass game against Wisconsin. They didn't shoot the ball well at all. A lot of balls just not going in, getting decent looks a lot of the time, especially early in the game, but the ball wasn't going in. The fact that the game was so close, a massive part of that is credit to their defense and their energy and their intensity on that end of the court. And that's just something that it felt like we didn't see all the time under Turgeon. Even though his teams were good defensively, they didn't have that intensity that it was able to create opportunities offensively, and they didn't run after that. So I think that's something. I think teams are legitimately, if maybe not scared to play Maryland right now, but I think it's intimidating when you have a team that presses and plays with that much energy defensively. It's something you really have to take into account, and it causes you to have less time on the shot clock once you get the ball up the court.
Yeah. Well, from a defensive standpoint, Mark Turgeon's teams were always good in half-court defense. They were always very good there. And I thought his teams always, for the most part at least, if not always, I thought they always brought effort and they played hard. I just think that Willard's teams, from an effort standpoint, have taken it to a different level. Now, defensively, though, what Willard does is he mixes defenses up within a game, and he's pressing, in different ways. Those are the radical changes defensively. Again, though, generally, Mark Turgeon's teams were always very good defensively, so I don't want to take anything away from him there, but Kevin Willard has ratcheted it up with multiplicity, and the effort level is higher than where it was under Turgeon's teams, and it's noticeable. what they're doing out there on the court. And that Illinois game was an example of that, and two heavyweights there. And that was such a big win for Maryland for a couple of different reasons. They only play Illinois once during the regular season. Maybe they'll see them in the Big Ten tournament championship game, but they don't have to give a repeat trip to Champaign, where they probably wouldn't come away with a win if we just had to go based on things now. And we say that only because Illinois is such a darn good team, and they went and beat Texas, ranked second in the country, albeit on a neutral court, but they won that game in, I think it was double overtime, actually, or single overtime. But that could be a Final Four team, just seeing that the way that they're put together. Brad Underwood's done a nice job. But the energy level by Maryland has been phenomenal, not just that Illinois game, but some games prior that I finally had a chance to see a complete game with them. So those are the real changes there. And as they get adjusted a little bit, and we'll talk about the Wisconsin game here in a second, but as they get adjusted to some of the newer guys to Big Ten play and the physicality of some of the teams and such, they'll be better as the season goes on. And we'll get a repeat game against Wisconsin at home at the end of January.
Yeah, I mean, this Wisconsin game, they lose 64-59. Right out of the gate, they were getting decent looks, especially from a long range, and they just weren't hitting. And
yeah, 0-for-5 from three to start. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this is something that going into the season, we kind of expected. And it's funny, as those first few shots weren't hitting, I was watching the game with my dad, and I kind of turned to him. I'm like, you know, they were kind of due for one of these games. They had been shooting out of their mind the last few games, especially that Illinois game. I mean, Ian Martinez had multiple threes, Jameer Young with the three, and he really hadn't shot well all season as far as a high percentage.
That was his best game, yeah.
Yeah. So that game, obviously, on the road, but they hung tough, even though it seemed like they were overmatched and the shots just weren't falling. They only lose by five, and they really had an opportunity till the end. So that, if you're looking for a positive, that's the positive, where you don't expect them to always shoot this poorly. I mean, Dante Scott had a really bad game.
Yeah.
They turned the ball over more than they had all year. It was just a very strange game, but they kept the effort up in the entire game, and it allowed them to stay in it till the end. And that gives you hope for, say, this week, this Sunday afternoon against Tennessee, an even better team than Illinois, who obviously they beat, on a neutral court in Barclays Center in Brooklyn, and a really good defensive team, even better defensively than Wisconsin, who is really good defensively. But it gives you hope that even if things don't always go their way, they're going to bring the intensity and they're going to be able to keep things close.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's absolutely right. And they ended that first half on a 14-4 run to pull within two at halftime. I think it was 31-29. You know, and ironically, you know, Wisconsin, who's usually a very good three-pointing team, and this year they're not as good a two-point shooting team. I think 41%, and that ranks very low across Division I teams. At halftime, Maryland was shooting from three-point range 10% better than Wisconsin was, and that's with an 0-for-5 start from three-point range, which was surprising to see. Wisconsin, though, was shooting better from the field at 48%, where Maryland was 42. But Maryland matched them on the boards. They trailed by just one rebound. Wisconsin had 16. Maryland had 15. But it was 5-5 in the assist-to-turnover ratio for Maryland, where it was 9-5 for Wisconsin. And we know these Wisconsin teams, they're really good at not turning over the ball. They eat up a lot of clock on their offensive possessions. So offensively for you, you better be efficient, or you better hit that offensive glass and give yourself second, maybe third opportunities to get points, because otherwise it's not going to happen. And again, that's a good Wisconsin team in the half court defensively as well. And on top of that, the other thing is that Maryland's offense had been generating, I could take a look at this here, they had been scoring off of turnovers. They've been forcing 13.5 turnovers per game. That translated to 17 points off turnovers. 21% of the Terps' offense generated from turnovers. Going into the game against Wisconsin, you had to know that that likely wasn't going to be the case. So you've got to find those points somewhere else. And it did play out. I think Maryland had 13 turnovers in the game to Wisconsin had 8. And of those 8 turnovers, I don't know how many the Terps turned into points. I don't think it was very many, though.
Yeah, I think one thing that this team is going to struggle with this year defensively is teams that have talented big men, which is pretty much everybody in the Big Ten, and can shoot the ball really well from range. Because for Maryland, especially when Julian Reese is out, it seems like they want to go to a 2-3 zone defensively because they're undersized down low with Patrick Amelian or whoever they have playing the five. Typically, it's Amelian. But if you're going to play zone, what's the best way to beat a zone? It's shooting from three. So that's what Wisconsin was able to do when they heated up from range in the second half. Maryland had Amelian in, and they were shooting the ball really well with three, from three, especially Connor Asigian, the freshman, who was one of the best three-point shooters in the Big Ten.
Well, he saved the best for last because he struggled in that game until the end when he hit two threes. He also made a pair of free throws as well. But that was a killer. And then I'm trying to remember one of their starters hit a big three within the last 3 minutes as well. So they were clutch down the stretch.
Yeah, they absolutely were. And that was the difference in the game. And Maryland, even though they were falling behind by, you know, nearly or double digits at times late in the game, they did rally and came back and kept things close. So that was obviously good to see. There is a daunting schedule coming up. I've been mentioning it all night. Tennessee in Brooklyn on Sunday afternoon, and then next week at home against UCLA. One of the biggest home games they're going to have all season. We saw how the crowd turned up for Illinois and the gold rush, and that obviously helped them. So UCLA should be very similar, if not better. I know I talked to Pat before last week, before the Illinois game, and we kind of agreed that two wins during this stretch would be considered very successful. They picked up the one against Illinois. So would you agree that this team should be able to, based on what we've seen the first month, should be able to pick up a win against either Tennessee or UCLA?
I feel like they can. I do. And I think that Illinois game more than battle-tested them ready for these games. And Wisconsin as well. Wisconsin may not have been ranked. They were receiving votes. They nearly beat Kansas, as we know. There's a crazy circus play at the end of that one that lost them the game. So, yeah, I there's no reason that they can't go into those games and have a good shot at winning those games. And defense, I mean, defense is huge. That Tennessee game, by the way, is on a neutral court. It's not at Tennessee. So that'll help to some extent, although that's the case for both teams, but a little closer for Maryland than Tennessee. And one would think that Maryland would have more fans in the stands, not just because of the proximity to Maryland, but because of the amount of Maryland grads that are from New York. So you would like to think that Barclays Center will have a decent amount there. But, yeah, I really do think that they could take one of two there. There's no question about that. And hopefully they'll bounce back, and no reason to think that they can't off that Wisconsin game. And they still should feel really good about themselves. You'll look back and say that, right, it wasn't their best game. Wisconsin made plays. They played well. And Maryland was right there, you know, until the very end. And you've got to assume that Dante Scott and or Hakeem Hart will play better than they did the other night. And this is a learning process for some of the other guys. But, yeah, and look, Julian Reese had foul trouble, although he did end up playing 31 minutes. But he wasn't as much of a factor as you would have liked. But let's not forget St. Peter's after UCLA. I mean, that's not a ranked team, but that's a good mid-major team. And I know the roster's not the same as last year, and I haven't looked at the record for this year. But, you know, that could end up being a game you look back on and say, yeah, that's a decent resume building win too.
Yeah, I said it before last week when we were looking at these four games, Illinois, Wisconsin, and Tennessee, UCLA. A loss in any of these games is not going to hurt you. So really, these games can only help. It's a good experience. As far as tournament resume, though, a loss wouldn't hurt you. A win really helps.
I think that's a fair characterization because they'll get plenty of opportunities in the Big Ten. But it would be nice if they got one of these two. But you're right. It's not in any way detrimental to them making the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, you look at KenPom. After the Wisconsin game, they didn't budge. They remained ranked 19th. So obviously the advanced metrics and the analytics say that loss didn't exactly hurt them as far as tournament resume. But one of these wins, because you know that Tennessee and UCLA are both going to be classified as quad one and high quad one by the end of the year. You expect that. So a win in either would be great. A win in both would be kind of shocking the world and really bringing Maryland potentially probably up to top 10. So things to look forward to, two big games. I think for all of us after 10 years of Mark Turgeon, having a difficult non-conference schedule is a welcome sight, especially in a first year here for Willard, able to make his mark and showcase Maryland in different locations, once in Connecticut this season and once in New York City, not shying away from stuff like that, and not shying away from massive matchups like Maryland, UCLA, and they'll obviously go out to LA, I believe it's next year, as part of a home and home. So these are obviously all good things, and seeing these non-conference teams and giving the team the ability to be challenged is never a bad thing. Heading into what is probably going to be the best basketball conference in America.
And look, if some losses pile up, they pile up, but it's about playing hard, being competitive, guys getting better, and realizing that they weren't expected to do much this year and that they had deficiencies on the roster. But we'll see where it goes. They have a brutal start, though. And I look, the Big Ten in general, and I think you just pointed out, Big Ten in general, very good basketball conference. So there aren't that many gimmies anyway. But they have a brutal start to their schedule in January. You know, at Michigan, at Rutgers, home against Ohio State, at Iowa, Michigan back home, at Purdue, Wisconsin back at home. Then Nebraska at home, which may be a little bit of a break, you would think, but then at home against Indiana. So they really need to make use of those home games. Now, Michigan's lost a starter for the year. They've lost some close games to some teams. You know, Rutgers on the road, that's usually a very tough team or tough game. Ohio State was a very good team last year. Iowa's Iowa, Purdue's Purdue. Those road games are never easy. So, you know, let's be realistic about things that, you know, they're going to have a few more losses here in the next month. Let's just hope equally they can throw some wins in there. I took a look. St. Peter's is 4-4 so far, and they've suffered some rough losses. So they're not the team that they were last year.
Okay. Yeah. I think looking at the Big Ten conference this year, I mean, are there any easy wins, easy games? I don't think there are.
Other than Nebraska and Minnesota, maybe?
Yeah, because, I mean, you saw Rutgers wasn't necessarily expected to be really good, and then they went and beat Indiana. And then you saw, well, Northwestern, are they that good? Well, they just went and beat Michigan State. So it's really hard to know who's bad. We know that there are a lot of really good teams.
Yeah.
But it's hard to know who's really bad. I mean, we know Purdue, Indiana, top-notch championship contender teams. But again, Indiana just lost to Rutgers. Who knows?
Well, and two, and this, I think, speaks to the strength of the Big Ten. And look, I understand the Big Ten hasn't won a championship since 2000. I understand that they haven't fared as well in the Big Ten, or excuse me, the NCAA tournament as they should have. Although I always take that on a year-to-year basis about where were they seated, who were the matchups, what were they expected to do against those teams, et cetera. And I think I looked at last year's tournament, for instance, and broke it down and said, actually, the Big Ten did pretty well considering all in all. But you take a look at like a team like Michigan State, and they're not ranked this year, and I'm taking a look at them right now, but even a down year for Michigan State still likely presents a tough battle, and Maryland has to play them on the road in February. So, you know, a down year for them, that still doesn't mean that you're not going to get a solid game from a Hall of Fame coach in Tom Izzo, and they're 6-4 to start the year. But they did have a win over Kentucky. But they lost to Gonzaga, and they lost to Alabama. They lost to Notre Dame. But again, all good programs.
I feel like, though, in a quote-unquote down year for Michigan State, you typically see that. They'll have a rocky first month or two. It's kind of like what we've seen for it's kind of like what we've seen from the New England Patriots at times, especially when they still had Tom Brady. The first couple months, little rocky, but by the end, you know they're going to be in the playoffs and they're going to be competing for a Super Bowl. And it's the same thing with Michigan State. If they're in the tournament as a 7 seed or even a 10 seed, you're like, well, they could go and win it all because they've done it before. Yeah. And they've been close. So you can never count out Tom Izzo. And on the road, yeah, I don't think Maryland is ever going to be favored in that game. It's going to be a really tough matchup, but that's why you're in the Big Ten for games like that and matchups like that against coaches like that.
Well, and you always wonder, does the Big Ten conference, because it's so good, teams beat up on each other? Is that why they don't do as well necessarily in the NCAA tournament, or why they haven't won a title since 2000? You know, that could be. And you know my feelings about conference tournaments. sure, they're exciting. They add extra games, but I'm not a big fan because they really, you know, devalue the regular season. And you have to wonder about how much wear and tear these tournaments are the teams to go all the way and win it, you know, how much that does to them. And I know these conference tournaments, but again, this speaks to devaluing the regular season. I know they can help teams that are on the bubble. And if you're that team on the bubble, you're loving a conference tournament, but stepping back and just taking off any team hats you may have on, those don't help. Those don't help you either, you know, in terms of wear and tear on you.
Yeah, so obviously before the year, we talked about expectations for Maryland, and I asked Pat this, and I'm sure I know your answer, but I assume your expectations have changed from what they were from the beginning of the year for this team.
To a degree. But look, if at the end of January their record is, you know, 15 and, well, let me tell you, that wouldn't be that. Wait a minute. Let's say they got 3-6-9 in January. They've got 4 games left, 13. So they've got 8 wins right now. You know, I mean, if their record was, I don't know, you know, 13-6 or 13-7 at the end of January, would I be surprised? No, I wouldn't be.
Yeah. And you hope that they're competing in those losses and that they're able to pick up a couple big wins at home. I think that's what you're hoping for.
Yeah. I'll put it this way. Obviously, I think we'll know a lot more after next Wednesday with this team, because that, from a resume standpoint, that gives them more of a margin of error in the Big Ten. So I think for me, let's see if they somehow win both those games, there's a big margin of error in the Big Ten. If they lose those games, then it's a different story. If they split those games, well, it's somewhere in the middle. But let's get past these first two games or these next two games, and then I think I'll have a better idea. But let's just say they split them and then finish out. So that would make them what? They would be 9-2 and then what? 11-2. So let's say they're 11-2 going into January, into the new year. At that point, let me see how they fare through the first 5 games in the conference of the new year. And then I'll tell you whether or not I feel like, you know, my expectations have drastically changed for them for this year to the end of the year or compared to what we thought. Yeah.
I think it's about setting the expectations. I think it's about setting a culture and a foundation for the program. And I think so far they've done a good job of that with their energy and intensity. And now it's about recruiting players that fit that and coaching up the guys that you have. So all things to watch for, a big week in Maryland basketball coming up with these two games. We all have articles up at BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com. So check those out. Join the conversation on the message board. I'm on there during games, so definitely be sure to join us there. Join the conversation. Follow us on Twitter @TalkingTerpsBSL. For my co-host, Mike Popovic, I'm Zach Kiesel. Roll Terps.